Accession number 26755, Reel 4.
Amazing. We would have been seen miles away, but we had to have them on because of the nature of the country, and there was no moon, not at that time. So we came back empty-handed. We used to go out on convoy, and the fittest would pick up the rear, and they had 1,500 weight with me driving. And one day, a vehicle packed up, its battery was flat as a pancake, so I had to nip back to camp to get a spare. Unfortunately, I picked up a puncture. So I had to hitchhike back to camp another 5-6 miles with a passing African lorry and leave my two fitters there in the back of the truck, all carrying rifles and 10 rounds, of course, for self-defense. But they were absolutely grey with fright, because this is a wild country, mark you, and also a game reserve, so if they shot, they'd have to make sure of killing any, whatever it was, that was attacking them, and only if they were attacked. Anyway, I got back to camp, got in another vehicle, went out and did all the necessary and carried on, did all the repairs required, and joined up with the convoy, and that was that. Then, a day or two later, back to camp. The armored car squadron stationed at Nanyuki, they were also on maneuvers with us, and they were staghounds. I don't know if in those days they were quite nifty little jobs, and you could go as fast in reverse as you could forward. What actually happened, they had a double gearbox, if you like, and a double steering wheel, front and back. So all the driver did was swing his seat round and carry on with the driving. Well, two or three of them were on patrol. I went down a track with not much room on it to get off anywhere, and they came across half a dozen elephant. They sat there watching the elephant, waiting for them to move out of the way, which of course they didn't. So the chap in front got a bit fed up and sounded his horn. Oh dear, that sounded like a challenge to the elephants. So the bull elephant turned round, head down, ears flapping, and came on at the double. They smartly switched round the engines and went back like the clappers out of the way. We laughed like a drain when we heard it. There we are. This is all the fun of the game. Anyway, while I was at camp, I had a letter from a lady in town who was running a business where my mother was helping out, in which she said that she and her husband were going over to UK on 6 months holiday in May, and if my fiancé and myself were married by then, would we house sit for them? No wages for the servants at all, just pay for the water and light that we used. So I sent a letter to my wife, still in Dar es Salaam, saying, what do you think of the enclosed? I forgot to enclose the letter. So she was working with her boss on that Sunday morning with a bit of extra dictation, and she says, can I put a phone call through? So she did, and got through. We were connected up then. And asked what it was all about, so I was able to tell her. So we decided we would get married earlier than anticipated. We hadn't thought of getting married much before about August, September. However, our time expired in April, and we decided we would get married then. In the middle of April, we duly got married and spent our honeymoon on a farm of some friends up country. Best honeymoon I've ever had. I was out shooting every day, up at dawn and back at dusk. Fine start for married life, wasn't it? Anyway, been married for 54 years this coming April. Not bad. So, must have been something all right. As already mentioned, I joined the Kenya Regiment, and then toward the end of 1951, all the peasants in Egypt went on strike, and they formed the labour force for all the British Army units, including ROC stores. So the army decided to replace them with African troops from Kenya, and asked anybody with KAR experience to go back, which included, of course, Askari NCOs as well. So I decided to go back in to see if I could make a career again. I was nostalgic for the army life, I must admit. And I was kept at the base over Christmas. He said, we're out at a place called Athi River, which was some 20-odd miles from Nairobi. I had to drive home at night and back to work in the morning. And then after Christmas, I was detached to one of the companies, and we went up to Egypt. There were 410 Askaris, a major, two captains and a lieutenant, a CSM, CQMS, and two sergeants, of whom I was one. And we got up to Egypt. It got rather fun because we had a ship that used to take people up to a port on in Saudi Arabia, where they would drop off pilgrims for the journey to Mecca. So we were in quite good, comfortable accommodation. We stopped at Aden, and of course the bomb boats came out and flogging swimming trunks, and I asked how much, and they said 20 bob. I'd called the African Sergeant Major up and said, knock him down to 10 bob for me, which he did, and I saved him then. Going up, it was rather interesting as we going round the corner and the Horn of Africa, because for the first time in their life, these Askaris who had never seen the sea before saw flying fish. And they sent for me post haste. I went down. They said, Brother Sergeant, what is that? I said, it's a fish that flies. They looked at me much as to say, pull the other one, it's got brass bells on it. So I said, well, please yourself, it's either a fish that flies or a bird that swims. They thought for a minute and said, well, Bwana, you must be right. I must recap slightly, because we were at Mombasa waiting for the boat for about a fortnight. And of course, being the only Swahili speaker other than the 410 Askaris, everything was passed onto my shoulders. I would come down from Athi River in the troop train with one of the captains. And he was a regular too. And we stopped at one place. I said, fancy a cup of tea, sir? He said, yes, but where are you going to get the hot water? I just looked at him and put some tea in the teapot, walked down to the railway engine and said to the driver gave us a squirt of steam, mate, and there we had our pot of piping hot tea. Anyway, when we got down to Mombasa, I had to take the chaps every morning onto the beach on PT. And the first morning, up, two, three, up. I dismissed, and they all rushed out into the Indian Ocean for a swim and a splash. Within 2 minutes, I was surrounded by a crowd of them. "Bunna, Sergeant Savage, you're our mother, you're our father. Why did you not tell us this water is not fit for drinking?" Of course, most of these chaps were from the Lake Victoria area, which is fresh water. And of course, they were used to going in and scooping up a mouthful and having a nice little drink. You can't do that with the Indian Ocean, as they found out to their cost. We duly got up to a place called Adabia, with a small dock south of Suez, in the top end of the Red Sea, and moved into camp. It was known as Enugu Camp, which didn't go down very well. It had been formerly a camp occupied by Mauritian troops, Royal Pioneer Corps. But our East African pioneer chaps didn't like it because Enugu was too much like the word Nugu, which in Swahili is monkey. So it was quickly changed. And the demarcation of the camp itself was purely a circle, a large circle of course, of dunnet wire. And our tents were pitched inside, half dug down into the desert, and making a bit of depth to the tents. And, we've been there for 3 or 4 days, and I went out for a stroll around the perimeter, and I came across half a dozen of them, looking very woebegone. And they stopped me and I said, "Buona Sergeant, where is East Africa from here?" So I worked it out and duly pointed. They all turned round there and faced that direction and heaved deep sighs. The poor devils are homesick. Of course, everything, as I say, for our African troops used to fall into my lap. And I went round one day checking on the provost sergeant and the chaps on drill and so forth, or punishment drill, to find that they were sort of shambling around and ambling at the half double and what have you. So I called a halt, and harking back to the KR days where we had a Somali a corporal in charge of the police, I said to one of them, "Hey, first one in the rank, you pick up that rock, that chunk of coral, fairly big." "You me?" "Yes, will." He picked it up and said, "Now double." The crime rate dropped, because you see, we had a 5 mile route march from the camp down to the docks and back again at night. So, of course, some of them would rather stay at camp, irrespective of the fact that they lost pay. They didn't mind that, as long as they didn't have the route march. Anyway, the crime rate dropped. And then one day, the major gets off his backside and goes round with an African interpreter. Comes across this lot, he's horrified. "Who gave orders for this?" Of course, the provost sergeant naturally says, "Buona Savage." "Oh dear, it will cease immediately. He sent for me and tore strips off me." And what do you know? The crime weight doubled overnight. I'll continue with my post-British Army service, just for your interest, because the training I had stood me in good stead eventually. One night I was orderly officer, or non-commissioned officer, but we took our turn on the roster. And I got up about midnight to go and check the guard. And when I was getting dressed, I was sitting on the edge of my bed and reached down for my boots. Instead of reaching down to my right side with my right hand, I reached over with my left and trapped myself between my thigh and the iron bed. Oh dear. Within a couple of hours, I was swelling up like a balloon, just the one that I'd sat on. I went to see the MO in the morning, and he prescribed M&B 693, May and Baker, recipe 693, something like that. Anyway, I told him that I was allergic to sulfur drugs, as well as penicillin. He said, "What do you know about that? You take them." I said, "But I'm allergic." "You do as you're told." "Yes, sir, yes, sir. Three bags full, sir." So I took them. And then after 2 or 3 hours, my face swelled up and all red and blotchy. So they sent for the MO, who came up to see me. And damn near had kittens on the spot. Got the ambulance and rushed me into the hospital at Fayed, where I was given no treatment at all, other than as much as I wanted to drink of anything I wanted to drink, to flush the sulfur out of my kidneys. While I was still under treatment, an African of the East African Pioneer Corps from a different company was brought in one of the beds in the ward. And it seems he had fallen off the back of a truck and had crushed his pelvis. I don't know whether he'd been run over or what. Anyway, he was moaning very well during the night, keeping us all awake. So in Swahili, I told him to shut up and behave like a warrior and bear his pain. Rather to my horror, next morning I was told he had died during the night. I must admit I didn't feel very proud of myself. Another chap in the ward, he was the unit boxer from one of the infantry units, and well, in training, and at this particular time was lying on his bed in his barrack room. And at the end of the barrack room, on the outside, as was quite common in those days, a target was painted to teach recruits how to aim a rifle, being held in a proper rifle stand and so on. And chap in charge of the squad, Sergeant Major, I think, he put a round in, thinking it was dummy, but it wasn't, it was live. And as the chap pulled the trigger, of course, it went off bang. At the precise moment that this chap, lying on his bed, decided to sit up and put his feet on the floor. And the round of ammunition went straight through him from side to side and perforated his intestines. So he was in hospital there with his intestines out on top of his body so that they could heal without any pressure from anything inside. The poor devil, he was in agony, but I must admit he bore it very well. While I was there, I whipped off into the operating theatre. I wasn't operated on other than, so far as I know, I was put out. And the MO used a shufti scope. Anybody will tell you what that is. It's one of these things that with a light at one end and you put it down the end and push it right through and have a look at your insides. Anyway, whatever happened, I have no idea. But months afterwards, I was at a dance with a friendly sergeant's mess, and there was a nurse from the hospital. Well, they had a number of them there, of course, they were in great demand. And she got chatting to me. She said, "Sergeant Savage." I said, "Yes." "Were you in a hospital recently?" I said, "That's right." "You've got a green dressing gown?" I said, "Yes." "Ah, why?" Well, she would not elucidate. But I couldn't get any further with her, so whatever happened, God only knows. I don't. While I was there, a cousin of mine, on my mother's side of the family, he was in the Coldstream Guards. And his battalion was out there in Egypt, so we got together. And at the end of my 2 years, I'd had enough of that major. He was a proper blimp. He and I just did not see eye to eye. I mean, he used to run the adjutant ragged. I went on leave for Christmas, 52, back to Nairobi, for the princely price of 2 and 6. There was what they call a milk run, carrying mail and what have you, of a plane, and it touched down at Aden and then carried on to Nairobi. And it used to take people on leave to Nairobi. Well, this was just about the time of the outbreak of Mau Mau, and all leave had been stopped to Nairobi because people used to go and spend their leaves at the RAF camp at Nairobi. However, I was going to my own family, so it was a different matter. But when I got to Aden, a little whippersnapper of a one-stripe pilot officer, would it be? "You can't go on to Nairobi. No leaves in Nairobi. It's cancelled." I said, "I'm going to my own..." "Doesn't matter. Leaves cancelled." So I went into Aden and saw the welfare major there. I said, "No, it's all wrong. He's up the creek. It's the people who are spending their leave in the RAF camp." But the one striper wouldn't be told. And I'm moping very well around the orderly room, and the clerk, corporal, said, "Sarge, you've got half a crown?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Yeah, let me have it." So I gave him half a crown, and he gave me a receipt for the half a crown, for a lunch voucher. I said, you just be there tomorrow morning." So the next morning I went there. All the African askaris were going because they were going on compassionate grounds because the houses had fallen down. Well, damn it, they're not in mud huts with grass roofs. They fall down periodically. But they got their leave and they were going on. So I joined them, and then the one striper saw me. And he said, "I thought I said you were not going." So then the corporal called him on one side and said, "Excuse me, sir. Matter, 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 mumble, mumble, mumble." I don't know what he said. But the one striper looked at me, glared, and said, "All right, on you go." So I blessed that corporal. I don't know what happened, but perhaps he said something about having paid for it, they couldn't get the money back and all the rest of it. So I finished up. It cost me 2 and 6 return from Egypt to Nairobi and back. Mind you, it didn't cost the African askari anything. Still, I couldn't grumble. And then the following year, in 53, I was on leave again. This particular 2 year stretch that they'd offered us included 6 weeks leave each year. Unheard of. I put in for leave the following year, and our adjutant in the APC, "You had leave, you can't go again." I said, "Under the terms of my contract, I can, sir." "Have you got the copy of our contract?" I said, "What, me?" "No, I'm new." She said, "No." So I wrote to my father, who contacted one of his friends in the army headquarters there and got a copy of it, which he sent to me, and I passed on to the adjutant. And I duly got my leave. I hadn't timed it to be so, but I happened to be on leave for the coronation of our present queen. And my wife was on holiday with my mother and father and our daughter, staying with friends in Portsmouth. And I sent a telegram, because I couldn't do it until the last minute. We stopped at Malta to refuel, and from Malta I sent a telegram. Operation Love Nest begins tonight. Stand by. I couldn't give any further details, not knowing when we'd arrive. Oh, we duly touched down at Blackbush, and we got buses into the centre of London, where we were dealt with and sent on our various ways. And I got down to Portsmouth late evening. Well, my daughter, who was then just short of 2 years of age, I was sleeping, sharing a double bed with my wife. So when I got down there, she was put on a bed and a mattress on the floor to make room for me in the bed. In the morning, she gets up, climbs onto the bed, looks at her mother and says, "Morning, Mummy." Looks at me, doesn't remember me, of course, and says, "Good morning, Uncle." I said to my wife, "How many bloody uncles has she been seeing?" I said, "It's a family joke. Even now, we embarrass my daughter when we tell the story." But that wasn't the end of it. Well, we travelled around a bit, and we went to relatives of my wife at Leicester, and we were there for the coronation, and we watched it on TV, of course. It was only black and white in those days, but what a sight. And I'll never forget the Queen Mother coming on there, absolutely sparkling with her jewels and whatever on her dress. She was a beautiful sight. After my leave was up and I went back to Egypt, my wife went to see my grandmother at Stratford-on-Avon, the one where I used to spend my holidays with my folks being in India. And of course the train from Leamington Spa to Stratford-on-Avon stopped at every station, and usually twice in between, one of those things. And of course it didn't have a corridor. My wife was sat in the carriage with my daughter on her lap. It stopped at one station, and according to my wife, a dirty old tramp got on and sat on the diagonally opposite to my wife. My daughter looked at him, scrambled off my wife's lap, went across to him, looked him straight in the eyes and said, "Hello, Daddy." My wife said she didn't know where to put herself. She felt like disowning the child. Of course, after my leave, I went back to Egypt and finished my time there, and went back to Nairobi and looked around for a job. And I was given the tip there was a vacancy in the African Affairs Department of the Nairobi City Council. So I put an application in for it and was duly interviewed. Well, before I went up to Egypt, I had been treated by an ear specialist for a growth of coral in my ears, evidently from the sea at Dar es Salaam. He cured it. But with swimming in the Red Sea, it started up again. So I went to see him and told him all about it. And then he asked me about all the different things. And I told him what I'd been doing, and he said, "How did you get on with them?" I said, "Fine." I treated them fairly but firmly. I said, if I could help them, I helped them. If they asked for a kick in the pants, they got a kick in the pants, and they knew they had deserved it, and there was no hard feeling. Well, when I went out for an interview, it was, consisted of the head of the department plus the African Affairs Committee head, who turned out to be my ear specialist. So when they asked me what I would do, I couldn't change my story into saying I would...